Thank you everybody for coming and joining us this evening for a new series called The Majesty of Torah. So I want to speak just a little bit before we look at the handout. I want to speak a little bit about what I'm thinking for this four-part series. So we are counting the Omer. We're in the middle of the count of the Omer. And it is so very important for us to create a conceptual framework in our minds about the greatness of Torah, about the vastness of Torah, about the beauty of Torah, about our connection in our personal place with Torah study and living a life of Torah. You know, I think about my life, and everyone probably reflects on their own, and that's really the purpose of this class, is for us to have a springboard for thought and discussion on important topics that are conceptual but relevant. You know, there's as important as it is for us as individuals to know what the Torah wants of us in terms of action, which is critically important for us to understand that, to be able to live a Torah life. Hand in hand with that as well is to understand the conceptual framework. Because, you know, if you're going through your daily routine, or you're going through your Shabbos, you're going through your holidays, you're going through life with a sense of what am I supposed to do, how do I do it, but you're not living the moment, if you don't have a conceptual framework, it's not as meaningful. If you know how to eat a matzah, you know how to lean, and you know how to chew and swallow and how much you're supposed to eat, but it doesn't connect to what the matzah represents on the night of Pesach, then we're really missing out on the experience. So the purpose of this series particularly is to develop a conceptual framework of how great Torah is. Because what are we doing? What are we doing in Sfirat HaOmer? What are we doing? It's not just counting and connecting Pesach and Shavuot, as we know. It's to actually develop an aspiration, a yearning, a longing to connect with Shavuot, with the giving of Torah. That means Hashem wants each and every individual Jew to develop a passion, and if not a passion, at least an emotional affinity to connecting with Torah. It's a relationship. It's a real relationship. It's not only a theoretical relationship or something we read about. It has to be real and relevant to us as people, as regular people. How do we connect with it? So what I hope to do, what I hope to share with you, are thoughts that will participate in your process of developing, and in my process of developing, more of a affinity and connection towards Shavuot. So when, as we come closer to Shavuot, we anticipate the time of Shavuot, which represents a relationship with Torah. Now, obviously, we're not receiving the Torah on Shavuot. We did that 3,300 years ago, so it's not as, we can't anticipate it as much. So what are we building up to? We'll have to discuss that. And Shavuot's going to come and go. There'll be great cheesecake, there'll be great meals, it'll be a great Yom Tov. There'll be wonderful, you know, shul experience, you know, it'll be great. And we might go through Shavuot without understanding the symbolism or really connecting with the symbolism. So we have to prepare ourselves to experience Shavuot on a different level. Not on just a level of, on the community level, on the family level, but on an individual level of a connection with Torah. Now, each of us, already throughout the year, has so much connection to Torah. We're so connected. The very fact that we're gathering for our Torah class frequently is itself, you know, testifies to our connection with Torah. So we really have that already. And some of us study daily, some of us study a few times a day, some of us study weekly or every other week, but we are an ongoing connection. We are a Torah community, and we're an ongoing ongoing connection with Torah. But we're actually trying to break out of the mold of what we think the greatness of Torah is and stretch our minds and our hearts to connect with something even greater. Because as great as we think Torah is, as wonderful and beautiful as we think it is even infinitely more beautiful and more great than we can ever imagine. So surely we can expand our concepts of the beauty and the greatness of Torah. And that's this exercise. We're trying to soften our hearts, open our minds to a bigger, even a bigger picture. Even a bigger picture. And to revisit the concepts we know, to expand them even further, to stretch our minds even further. So this class, it's a short session, because we aim to end it around 9 o'clock. So we have about 40 minutes. So hopefully we can have also a blend of, can have a blend of discussion as well as lecture. But so I just put a few references on the page that I want to share with you. We'll start with just reading briefly. I want to focus more on the second and third references. On the handout. Okay. So, the Sefer HaMitzvos, the book of Mitzvos, Mitzvah 306, just basically capsulizes what we've just said in a few words. The Mitzvah of Counting the Omer. So there's tremendous depth to the Mitzvah of Counting the Omer. We had an opportunity to talk about that a few years ago. A basic angle to this mitzvah is that the one and only core principle of Israel is the Torah. That means of the nation of Israel, is the Torah. Our principal purpose and connection and place in the world is with Torah. And the heavens and the earth were created to actualize the Torah's purpose. We know the Torah says, Bereshit bara Elohim, in the beginning Hashem created the world, and the world, the word Bereshit, the bet, can also be understood as bishvil, for the purpose of reshit. Be reshit, for the purpose of reshit. And reshit being the very first primal purpose of creation, which is the Torah. So the whole purpose of creation is for the Torah. And our whole mission as a nation, you know, we talk about mission statements, our whole mission as a nation is the Torah. The Torah is our mission. It is also the cause and reason for which we were redeemed from Egypt. We were taken out of Egypt so that we could accept the Torah and fulfill the demands of the Torah at Sinai. That is why we were taken out. When you take the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim, you will serve God at this mountain. And the serving of God at this mountain was receiving the Torah. Accepting the Torah. That's part of the framework of serving Hashem, is a total and wholehearted acceptance of the Torah's principles, the Torah's statutes. Therefore, we are commanded to count each year from the day following our Exodus. So, the second day of Pesach, we start counting the Omer, as you know, toward the day we received the Torah to demonstrate our outstanding desire to reach this auspicious and grave time. So, we are yearning. That's the purpose of the count, is to awaken us to the yearning. And there's a little discussion about this. I don't want to go into the great details. The question is, so why don't you count from the first day of Pesach, which is really when we left Mitzrayim, if the purpose was to leave to get the Torah, so let's start counting from the first day. That's a question that's asked. Another question that's asked is, why are we counting up? We should count down. You know, we're getting closer and closer and closer. And both the answers to both those questions really highlight the fact that we're anticipating. Because if you start counting from the first day, the anticipation is so great that it would overshadow the first day of Pesach, the going out of Mitzrayim. The Torah doesn't want us to lose that part. So we first remember Mitzrayim, and then we're ready to begin the great count. So great is the count, so great is the anticipation, that a Jew should aspire to connect with in the process of the Omer, is that if we would start on the day that we left Mitzrayim, it would overshadow the going out of Mitzrayim. So we want to start the next day. And why do we count up? We should count down. Right? The answer is, you're right. Halfway through the count, that'll be inspiring. 25, 24, 23, 22. Look how close we are. But when you start at number 49, you'll be like, oh no, 49? That's so far away. So that's why we start counting up instead. And there are other mystical reasons why we count up and not down. Obviously, we're counting toward a climax. So that this is just a prelude to the fact that we are to develop excitement for receiving the Torah. Okay, so now let's open our minds to what is Torah? A very basic question. Each one of us can answer that for an hour lecture with no problem. But let's see what the Shalach HaKadosh, the 17th century tzaddik, great, great pious person, Rabbi Yeshaya Halevi Horowitz, Shalach HaKadosh, what he writes about this. And this is my translation, so you'll excuse me if it's not perfect. The Pasuk says in Tehillim, we know, it says, Torah Hashem Temima Meshivas Nafesh. The Torah of Hashem is complete. It's perfect. It's complete in all its ways.
What is this? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But why does it say Temima? Why isn't it Shalem?
Okay, so maybe we can answer that question at the end as well. No, very good, very good. It's connected, actually. Right now we can explain that. It restores the soul. It's Meshivas Nafesh. It's Tamim. It has such a simplicity to it. Mm-hmm. Tamim also means, as we've spoken about in the sessions before, Tamimus means a simple-heartedness, simplicity. It's just simple. It's straightforward. Mm-hmm. Right? So the Torah of Hashem is complete, it's tamim, it's whole, it's perfect, it's simplicity, and it restores the soul. So this is actually a direct translation of what the Shalah says. The examining Kabbalists stated that the Torah is the imprint of Hashem, and the world is the imprint of the Torah. I think that's the line for the night. The Torah is the imprint of Hashem, and the world is the imprint of the Torah. So the Shalah wants to explain, what does this line mean? What do the Kabbalists mean when they explain the verse, Torah Hashem Temima Meshivas Nafesh, that the Torah is the imprint of Hashem, and the world is the imprint of the Torah? What does that mean? He says like this. A little Kabbalistic. In reality, the Torah is nothing less than the imprint of Hashem. It is the encoded revelation of Hashem's very designation of Yud-Heh and then Vav-Heh. We know Hashem has a name. Hashem's name is Havaya, or Yud-Heh Vav-Heh, which means Hashem is the omnipresent. He's Haya Hoveh V'yeh. He is present. He always was and always will be. Hashem is everywhere at all time. Hashem is beyond time. Hashem originated all of existence and is the only true real existence. It's so exciting for me, actually, that we can relate back to things we've spoken about in this class, in these classes before. We talked about Hashem being the only true real existence. Everything else, if you ask why is it that way, could have been this way, could have been that way. The only empirical existence that it has to be this way is Hashem's existence. That's what we mean, that He's the true real existence. So Hashem is the only firm, solid existence in everything that is. And He's designated as the omnipresent. That's why He's called the omnipresent. That's one of the reasons. Because Hashem is present. It's not a function of a certain dimension of reality. Hashem always is. He's Havaya. He is always present. From Hashem, through the process of revelation of the concealed, all existence came to be. That is, that the designation, we're going to break up Hashem's name from Yud-Heh and Vav-Heh. The name Yud-Heh and then Vav-Heh, let's break that up. the deep Kabbalah of the Yud and the Hey, but we'll begin to talk about it. Yud and Hey, the Yud and the Hey of Hashem's name is representative of the hidden thought, wisdom, and understanding, which can only be finally comprehended. We can't even know, we can no way grasp, no being in all of existence, not even the angels, can comprehend Hashem's true existence. What we can begin to comprehend is Hashem's imparting and revealing Himself into existence. That's basic Kabbalistic thought. Universal Kabbalistic thought. And that's the Yud and the Hey of Hashem. That there's a, whether it's a Yud and a Hey right now, we're not getting into why it's Yud and Hey. But there's Hashem's true existence, and then there's Hashem revealing Himself in the world. And the first aspect of that is so beyond us that in our lifetime, we will just come to understand through thought alone. We'll come to understand Hashem's revelation. His first, like the first imparting of Hashem's revelation into the world. The encoded exposure of this thought is the Torah Keduma, the primal Torah. You remember we spoke once about the Ramban's introduction to the Torah. And the Ramban spoke about that it's written on white fire, black fire on white parchment, and what that means. Also our Torah scrolls are black on white. And we spoke about the fact that there's a crystallizing that takes place of the Torah. But there's a chachma, there's this wisdom that is a precursor to all of creation. That's the, if you want to call it the first Torah, the primal Torah, the Torah Keduma, the original manuscript, if you will, of Torah. Right? Mm-hmm. That's where the word Torah comes from. Consider the word Torah, which connotes forward guidance. Moreh. The word moreh, if you go on a guide, you go on a guided tour in Israel over Pesach, so your tour guide is called a Moreh Derech. He's a guide, he shows you the way. So Torah means it's going from a point and it's like paving a path and implies the exposed path originating from concealment. So the word Torah means it is the body of thought, wisdom, and understanding which paves the way forward from concealment. So there's a hidden concealment and things begin to open up. We once connected that with the verse in the Torah, Vayomer Elohim Yihi Or, Vayihi Or. God said, let there be light, and there was light. That light is the original light which sort of paves the way and opens up for things to be understood and to be created. Then came the formation of the structure in its place, recognized by the finishing Vav and Hey, which represent a spiraling descent toward the spiritual and physical realms. So there's a further level of expose, if you will, from the Yud Hey, which forms the white, if you will, the almost incomprehensible wisdom of Hashem, which is like white light, which is the light Yehi Or, and from there comes a crystallizing and a formulating of thought and practice. And that is, we're going to now say, will come from there the other Torah, which is our Torah. Complete of this process emerges the Tiferes, and that's a Kabbalistic term, which means splendor. And the reason it's splendor is because it blends the upper realms fitting for this realm. So this enormous, vast, unintelligible wisdom that is divine is narrowed and marginalized and crystallized into something that can be presented and represented in this world into the written Torah. So our written Torah is considered Tiferes. It's considered the blend of this most abstract in the physical. The text of our written Torah. Known to us as the written law, and its malchus, the presence of the kingship of Hashem, which refers to sensing the presence of Hashem, is embodied in the oral law. Those of us that study the Gemara, we can feel that there's something so special, so mysterious, so mystique about the oral law. There's a wisdom, a hidden wisdom, and there's a mystique to that, and that is Malchus. That's sensing the presence of Hashem in the Torah. So we go all the way from the Yud Hey to the Vav Hey, all the way down, we have the written Torah and the oral Torah. And then, beautifully said, the tunnels and chambers, like all the various, if you will, capillaries, is that how you say it?
Capillaries.
Capillaries. And all the veins and all the arteries, all the channels that are created in that process are clothed in the spiritual light of the individual mitzvos. And in turn, this spiritual light is embraced in the actions of mitzvos of the Torah, which we received physically at Sinai through Moshe. So, that is our Torah and mitzvos. Our Torah and mitzvos are not just the book, they're not just the Talmud, they're not just the Midrash, and they're not just the mitzvah, the physical mitzvah. They're all coming all the way very, very greatly connected back to the very essence of Hashem, the true existence. That's Torah. This is what the Kabbalists mean when they say that Torah is the imprint of Hashem. That's what it means. You can see Hashem through the Torah. You can start to connect with that white light, that connection, that unintelligible, almost unintelligible wisdom that can only be understood with the deepest understanding through Torah. And that is what is meant with the above mentioned verse. The Torah of Hashem is complete. What does it mean it's complete? Tamima. It manifests itself entirely in the physical world and restores our soul by nurturing it with the original inspiration of Hashem. So it's Tamima in the sense that this enormous, vast, infinite Torah, primal Torah, which really is only an imprint of Hashem's true existence, it is complete. It reaches all the way through, it penetrates all the way through to our physical realm, to the point that you and I can study and open a book and connect to that hidden light which is encoded and encapsulated in the Torah. That's what it means, it's Tamima. It's not false. If it was false, it would be broken halfway. It wouldn't be able to reach. It reaches. Even a child sitting in cheder, day school, opens a chumash and studies something special. There's a connection. There's something unique. For all of us that know Torah, that for our experience with Torah study, that is what Torah has to offer. Okay. So that's Torah. I just thought that would be a good reference for opening our minds to the vastness of Torah. Any thoughts or comments on this?
Yeah. You answered my question.
Yeah.
In a sense, the Tamima is like simple truth, simple purity, simple completeness. I always thought of Tamima as like innocence. But it makes sense because something can be shalem, but it's not. Doesn't have the status that Tamima has.
Shalem means it could be complete, but it's not. Doesn't have that innocence to it. Purity and innocence.
Yeah.
That comes with Tamima.
Great.
Okay, there's probably, there's probably areas that I don't know, but I would love to know more about what Tamima really means in that sense. The only thing I would like to just make a connection to is something we've studied, the idea of being Tamim with Hashem, right? So, a person who is Tamim, who's simple-hearted, doesn't look for ways to manipulate and, you know, bend the rules, and just wants to be simple and with, then you're Im Hashem Elokecha. Like we learned once, Tamim, if you are Tamim, then you're Im Hashem Elokecha. Then you're with Hashem, your God. So here we're talking about restoring the soul. You know, this soul is lost out in the physical world. We're down here. We're so far from Hashem, in a sense. From that realm that's above the realms. Where, how are we connected? But our neshama comes down, and Torah Hashem Tamima, the Torah has that simplicity that grabs hold of nefesh, of Meshivas Nefesh, it grabs hold of the soul of a person, and could nurture and nourish that soul down here. That's what that pasuk is teaching us. And that's because it's coming from Hashem's imprint.
We say that in Shacharis.
On Shabbos. On Shabbos morning, we say that in the Tehillim that lead up to Shacharis. Yeah. Yes.
I'm not clear on the analogy. Just from the beginning, it says the Torah is imprint of Hashem, right? The Torah is. So is the Torah, when you say imprint, what's another word you could use instead of imprint? So that's throwing me off.
Okay.
I think of imprint that it makes mold of, you know, press something in.
Well.
So the Torah is what Hashem? What would be another word to say instead of imprint?
The clothing, the garments. You can see the form of Hashem, so to say. You could see the wisdom of Hashem. You can get to know Hashem, Hashem's true existence, through the garb of the Torah that's on the exterior.
Okay. And then it says, and the world is the...
The world is the imprint of the Torah. We know, he doesn't get into that over here, but we know that, without getting into details right now, we know that the world was created through the blueprints, in the sense, of the Torah. So if you look at the world's order, the world's laws of nature, the world's structure, the sound, light, all the different senses that we know in our experience, their order and their the way the, even to the millisecond of how the moon renews itself, the renewal, that's all learned from the Torah. The Torah is the blueprint. So that's what they mean, that the world is the imprint of the Torah. What we see out in our physical experience of everything, in our physical experience, can be sourced. We can see that in the text of the Torah and in the study of the Torah. So just as we can sense Hashem through the Torah, we can sense the Torah through the world. Just as we can sense Hashem through the Torah, by studying the Torah and understanding the Torah, we'll come to know Hashem. We can understand the depths of Torah by studying the world, the natural world. Because the natural world, it actually doesn't work that way for people who are the specialists of Torah. Right, the ones who are the scholars of Torah, Talmidei Chachamim, who understand the depth of Torah, don't look at necessarily the natural world to understand the Torah, but they look actually the other way. But we can also use the natural world to understand more depths in Torah, perhaps. Because it's the imprint. Okay. Okay, let's move on. Okay. So I'm a little bit of fast-tracking because of the short amount of time that we have, which is fine. How are we doing with time, actually?
Okay.
So the last concluding thoughts over here, and you can actually, if you want to write something down, so please for notes before or after. This is a beautiful piece of the Maharal. We're really fast-tracking, so I'm giving you, this is a menu of thought. We started with Sfira Sa'omer, we went to what is Torah, now we're going a little bit further, we're going to take two more steps, and with that we're going to conclude. So, the garments and beyond. So, this is an amazing thing. You'll recall, one time, I think twice actually, in this class, I shared with you, when we learned Chumash with the Ramban, that was one time, I shared with you a piece of the Zohar, where Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says, those people that think that the whole Torah is just the stories of the Torah, and it's, you know, Avram did this with Yitzchak, and so on, if that's all it's about, he says, I have much better stories to tell. I mean, if the whole Torah is just a storybook, I have many better stories to tell. Or if you will go into intricate law, we can maybe come up with even better laws, you know, or we can be very creative. So what is really the Torah? Says Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai in the Zohar, the Torah is not the stories. That's the garments of the Torah. Those who understand look beyond the garments to see the inner meaning of the Torah. That's what we talked about. I'm just trying to jog your memory by bringing that up. Now look at this new piece. It kind of complements that. This is really beautiful. Really beautiful. Brand new. Fresh off the press. Okay. The Gemara Megillah 32 teaches the following statement. A difficult statement. Rabbi Parnach said, one who grabs onto the Sefer Torah with his bare hands, so if you touch the Torah scroll with your bare hands, he says, will be buried bare. Now, a simple understanding means that his punishment will be that it'll end up that he'll be buried without clothing. You know, which is a disgrace to his body. Because he disgraced the Torah, he'll be buried bare. But the Talmud actually discusses that a little bit, and the conclusion there, the Gemara says, it means that he'll be buried without the merit of holding the Torah. Mm-hmm. Holding the Torah is a mitzvah. You're honoring the Torah by holding it, right? You're honoring the Torah. If you don't hold the Torah will fall on the floor. There's a mitzvah to hold up the Torah, right? Those of us have the honor of holding the Torah in shul when the maftir is read, or picking up the Torah, or if the Torah is about to fall, the person doesn't have a good grasp on it, to support the Torah, that is a mitzvah. That is a very important mitzvah of supporting the Torah. So that's a great mitzvah. But if a person does that with his bare hands, that means he takes off the coat of the Torah, and he just holds the Torah scroll in his hands, so he'll be buried when he's buried. When he comes to Shemayim and the time of burial, he will not have the merit of holding the Torah. It's as though he didn't hold the Torah. He'll be buried bare of that mitzvah. So the Maharal asks, again, it's pretty much a translation of the Maharal. We can ask, why is this action more than any other singled out as the one for which a person will not be rewarded? Say, you know, if a person didn't light candles on Friday night, I'm just giving an example, he'll be buried without that mitzvah. Or if he did the mitzvah wrong, whatever, I don't know. If a person put up the mezuzah like that, he'll be buried without that mitzvah. Why specifically, very detailed, that it's the holding of the Sefer Torah without its covering, that you'll be buried without that. Even though you held the Torah, but since you held it with your bare hands, you'll be buried without that reward. Why are we singling out that action? Listen to the great wisdom of the Maharal. Beautiful. The reason is, though, that just as the Torah itself did not descend to this world without garments, and it was not possible for a person to, figuratively, grab hold of the Torah, but only with its garments, right? The Torah, we don't have a concept of the primal Torah, the Torah HaKaduma, of the white parchment, the unintelligible, the infinite Torah. The only way we can have a connection in this physical world to Torah is through, so to say, the garments of the Torah, the stories of the Torah, the mitzvos of the Torah, the things that clothe the inner wisdom. And it was not possible for a person to grab hold of the Torah, but only with its garments. Just as the soul of a person cannot descend to this physical world without its garb of the human body. We're not only souls, we're bodies. This is a physical world. We're bodies. And the soul, which is so on high, comes straight from Hashem. It's part, the Kabbalah teaches that it's like a part of Hashem. It's imparted from Hashem. That cannot come into the physical world, but only in a physical body. So too, one who physically holds the written physical Sefer Torah without its cover will not be able to grab hold of that mitzvah. Since the Torah is not graspable without physical cover. So you might ask yourself, so if the Torah is so vast, so why don't we connect with that vastness? The answer is, there's no way, that's how vast Torah is. There's no way for us to connect with Torah without the garments. It's impossible. So if someone is holding the Torah, physically actually, not figuratively, he's holding the Torah with his bare hands, He's showing that he's holding the Torah. He doesn't need a cover for it. He's holding the Torah. The answer is, if you try to hold on to the Torah without the garments, you're not holding the Torah because you can't grasp the Torah. We cannot possibly grasp the Torah without the Torah being the inner wisdom of Torah, the almost beyond our intellect, and parts of it are beyond our intellect. Even the deepest Kabbalistic teachings do not even come to expose all of the inner secrets and the inner wisdom of what Hashem invested in the Torah. So it must be through talking about, well, what happens if you break my, if your ox gores my ox? What happens with physical damages? What happens with laws of divorce and marriage? It gets clothed in all the garments of the physical world, because otherwise we wouldn't be able to grasp it. Mm-hmm. Then holding the Torah without its physical garb is not actually considered to be the holding of Torah. It's magnificent. That's why you're considered buried without that mitzvah. So, I put in here in parentheses that the Maharal's magnificent point is that he extends the nature of Torah in the physical realm to the actual laws which govern Torah and its handling. And not only conceptually is the Torah out of reach without the garments of the oral written Torah and the mitzvos, but also the laws of the Torah are the same. That you can't hold the Sefer Torah with your bare hands, and you won't get the mitzvah if you do. Because even though you're holding the Torah, you're not really holding the Torah. That's how far-reaching this concept is. And the Maharal makes a similar point elsewhere. Each of us knows that in the Torah, there are invisible, so to say, like not written lines, but a sofer takes like a scratch line. What does he take? An instrument to carve out, like to mark lines in the Torah. So what? And a sefer Torah that doesn't have these marked lines on which the sofer, over which the sofer writes the words on a straight line. A sefer Torah that doesn't have that is not a kosher sefer Torah. A mezuzah also needs, the Talmud teaches, and that's the law, that a mezuzah also needs these etched lines where they use like a special
stylus,
yeah. Okay, to push into the parchment to make the lines. Says the Maharal, why? Why is that so important? The answer is because Torah represents a straight path. And if the Torah doesn't have those lines, it doesn't represent a straight path. It's not a sefer Torah. Mm-hmm. Similarly, if you handle the Torah with your bare hands, you're not holding on to the Torah, because the Torah can only be attained through its garments. That's the loftiness. By the way, as a side point, I wanted to give a class on modesty. We were talking about that. Some people raise that as a topic, right? Mm-hmm. I don't want to get into that right now, but I just want to mention as a side point, that the greatness of the reason that you can only connect to Torah through garments is because it's so precious and so dear and so high. When we clothe ourselves appropriately, whatever that means, but when we act appropriately, when we clothe ourselves appropriately, we demonstrate that what is inside of us is so precious and so dear, just as the Torah needs to have garments for it to be understood, so too a human being has such a deep soul and such an inner self that a person needs to clothe themselves to be grabbed or held or understood by others in order to be understood. Because if a person exposes themselves and doesn't cover themselves, then they're not going to be understood. Got it? They're not, just like the Torah, it's not going to be graspable. A person exposed is not actually understood. They're misunderstood. They're understood for what they're not. Just like the Torah would be understood for what it isn't without the garments. That's the depth of human nature. And if we can perhaps compare it in some way, compare it to the depth of Torah, and that's why. And you see a connection to modesty. And we have to have concluding thoughts, because time is short and about to end. Yeah? Does that work? Does that work with everyone?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Okay. So for conclusion, zeroing in even further, fast-tracking over here on the next step, is that, so what is then the purpose of the Torah? Quite simply, what is the purpose of the Torah? So the Vilna Gaon writes in his work called Chemda Genuza, It means a hidden treasure, mm-hmm. a hidden coveted treasure. Chemda Genuza. It's the work of the, one of the works of the Vilna Gaon. He writes in there that the purpose of the simple understanding of Torah, the most basic understanding of Torah, is to perfect and to rectify our base instincts. So if we have something that is, you know, we're jealous, angry, stingy, we're immoral, we have all kinds of dysfunctionalities, human nature, which is somewhat dysfunctional, it's corrected through the pshat, through the simple understanding of Torah. We all know that there are several levels and layers, deep layers of understanding the Torah. The simplest layer is called pshat. It's simple. It's just the stripping away of the simple layer of Torah, the very surface of the Torah. And the Vilna Gaon says in Hilchem de Genuza, it's not cited here, but he says that the purpose of the Torah is pshat, just a simple reading. If you read about justice, you read about morality, you just read about the story of Avraham Avinu, these simple understandings of the Torah, the garments, the outer layer garments, if you will, are there to interact with us in a way that straightens out our path. And connecting that with the statement of the Pasuk in Mishle, in Perak Dalet, Pasuk Yud Gimel, it says, in English, hold strongly to Musar, which can be translated as guidance, do not weaken, be proactive of it, for it is your life. So here the Vilna Gaon is going to comment on the verse which teaches us never to let go of our moral compass, our moral guidance, not to weaken it for a moment. We better be protective of it because it is your life. Those are the key words in this pasuk. It is your life. The Vilna Gaon writes, and here's another translation, for it is your life. Why is that? Because that which man lives for is, take out the word the, is in order to demolish a negative trait he has not yet demolished. The reason I am still living is because I have something to correct. I have something to correct. There's something else coming up in my life, another experience where I need to control my anger, learn how to deal with my jealousy, learn how to be more giving. There's something coming up in my life. That's why I'm alive. I'm alive to deal positively and perfect myself in the next experience and encounter that I will have. Therefore, a person must continue to hold strongly. If a person does not, he relinquishes the purpose of his life by saying, you know what? I'm just going to let my anger come out. I'm going to let my jealousy come out. I don't care that I'm stingy. I'm just going to overlook it. Then what then is the purpose of one's life? This is the famous line in the Vilna Gaon, that's well known of the Vilna Gaon statement, where he says the whole purpose of one's life, is to perfect our midos, to perfect our character. This is that famous line. And the reason I'm citing it here is because we really went fast tracking over here in 40 minutes, is to really connect the fact that what is Torah? Where is it coming from? Very high. And what then, it has actual practical ramifications. And most relevant to us is the fact that the Torah is speaking directly to us about the guidance that the Torah offers is for us to perfect our character. And if we let go of that, we let go of the purpose of life. So this is a little bit of a framework, just throwing it on the table, so to say. A framework of what we can begin thinking about or what we can continue thinking about in our process of preparing for Shavuot, thinking about what is Torah, how relevant it is, and how does it speak to me on my level, in my life, in my next experience that I encounter. Thank you very much.